I'm Lynn Joffe, and I welcome you all to this podcast that is exploring publishing and authors in South Africa. It is my honor and privilege to be sitting here with the Diana Ferris, poet, writer, activist, and all-round human being. Welcome, Diana.
Oh, hello, Lynn. Thank you for that nice introduction.
Well, you know, we met in a hotel room. We might as well stay here. And in fact, this podcast is coming to you remotely with the lovely Shannon Kennedy on machines. So, Diana, I don't want to go into your whole biography. I think people might know who you are, but I know you as a poet. How is the difference in the writing process between poetry and prose like you've written for your new book, The Boy Who Loved to Dance?
That's a very interesting question. And very interesting that you're asking it, because I was just the other day telling somebody, how do they get it right to write a novel? Because I would start on a short story and end off with a poem. The fact that I could write this children's book, The Boy Who Loved to Dance, it's probably because it's not a lot of words. I am an impatient writer. But if I can put my mind to it, I probably could write a novel if it was written, you know, like in short kind of
25 chapters of 800 words.
Yeah, that's right, of 800 words or 1,000 words. I love to write, but something happens when I have to write a long piece.
Mm. Interesting. But this as a children's book is actually quite lengthy. But before we get into length, why this book? Why the story of Johar? What inspired you or led you or motivated you to write this particular book?
I didn't intend to write about Johar, but then my publisher from New Africa Books phoned me and asked me if I didn't want to write about Johar. And because I saw a play about him, you know, not long before that, or maybe a year or two before that, I thought it would be lovely. And also, I have this childish or this children's streak in me. I can easily switch character. And I thought, this is going to be so interesting. I'm going to become a child, you know, when I write. And I love dancing. I'm mesmerized when people dance.
Are you a good dancer?
I'm a good ballroom dancer.
Oh, really?
But I think this little body can't do the modern jazz, you know, and when they kick their feet in the air. But I love dancing. There's a message in the body that the body can give you. Plus, I also believe that dancing is the freest that a body can be.
So did you go into the child mind as a sort of a little six-year-old dancer? Is that the space you wrote from?
I went absolutely into being this little dancer, this child, you know, who dances without any worries. And with that, because it was now writing about a boy, there's all these issues that I was thinking, this is going to be great, because I know about, you know, teasing. And the issue of gender and race and all those things and class, it was for me something that I could now do and not even think about it. It was there for me to write.
Did you write the book in English? And how did you transform it or verwerkt it in Afrikaans? Yeah, I'd like to know about the deal process.
I wrote the book in English. And strange enough, English is not my first language. I then translated it into Afrikaans because I thought it's silly. I'm an Afrikaans speaker and people are going to ask me, where's the Afrikaans version? And before they could, I translated it.
And in fact, when I was listening to, you read the English first and then you read the Afrikaans, and the Afrikaans just, for my English ear, read like poetry. And something happens in your personaliteit, wat verander, which changes into the essence of your linguistic, which is in fact Afrikaans, right?
Yes, reading in Afrikaans was the freedom that I got. Afrikaans is my mother tongue. It sits in my body. It sits in my joints, in my heart, in my eyes and my ears. So reading in Afrikaans will definitely be different than reading in English.
So you're the woman who loved to dance and the woman for whom language is part of your dance, right?
Yes. You can say a sentence and I can dance to that.
Beautiful. Let's dance.
Let's dance.
So how much research did you have to do to write this book?
I didn't have to do a lot of research on Johar because the internet is full of what he achieved over these years. So it was easy for me. And because I didn't have to tell everything, because it had to be short, it became even easier.
Had you heard of this man before you wrote the book?
Yes, I saw that play that he was in. The play that Basil Apollos directed, his whole life story. I saw it. And I was a bit worried about writing. Afterwards, I was thinking, I will have to concentrate on what the play says or what the play said and that I don't repeat and it looks as if I'm copying. And I think I managed to get it right.
It's a delightful hero's journey, which I suppose most stories are. From this young colored boy from District 6 who actually performed in front of the Queen of England.
Yeah.
There are so many beat points of his achievement. The fact that his community, in a way, sponsored him to be able to go to England. So there's a message, and I know that this was a long time ago. He you say he died 2 years ago. He was in his 90s, right? So did you have to sort of return to the roots of this in deep apartheid when black people had to stand behind at the back of the line? And so he actually, in a sense, transcended what was happening here in deep apartheid to triumph. So he spent his entire career overseas, right? How do you relate to Johar's journey as a writer of color, as we call it, as a colored woman with Khoisan roots, I believe?
I could actually identify so much with the story of Johar. I really think the fact that I could complete the story is because I could imagine him. I could imagine his story because I lived through a lot of that story. And so it becomes a wonderful book. Not a wonderful book, I mustn't say that, but a wonderful story about somebody who faced so many challenges and through his determination got up to the highest of all the ladders that there are.
So then the story, in a sense, one doesn't have to be a dancer or an indigenous South African to actually relate to this. I think little children, through bullying and not being allowed to be who they are, there's a very good universal message in this book, would you say?
I absolutely wanted this universal message to come through. I wanted, you know, because bullying, I know bullying from school. I was bullied. I saw how other children were bullied. And it was for me especially sad when little boys were bullied. And so to tell the story of Johar, of course he was bullied. Nowhere it says in the research that I did that he was bullied. But for me, it was important to put it in because I'm sure he was bullied. And then also the resistance, because there was no money and money had to come in. And how could a child or a young boy dance while everyone else is hungry? Mm. And then the other thing is, you know, it comes in about race. He couldn't, in his own country, he couldn't become the success that he became. He had to leave the country. And I think the crux of the story for me is that he had to be smuggled into the Alhambra Theater. That is that the point, that somebody had to be smuggled in. And I can imagine it was dark in the theater.
I can see the
Nobody
movie.
Saw his color. Mm. They could only see how he was dancing. And there he changed his life, but also the lives of many others.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful story. The story is written for children with a very much of an inner child sense, but the story is in actual fact for adults as well, wouldn't you say?
Yes, because if I look at myself, not because I'm the writer of the story, but when I read the story, I'm a child adult. There's no distinction between the child and the adult.
So it's an ageless book.
It's an ageless book. What a wonderful thing.
Did you ever meet this man?
I met Johar Musavel after the show. Was it in 2022? He came out after the show. He was the narrator of the show. And he came out and met people and took pictures.
In his 90s?
He was already 91.
Wow.
And I said to him, please, may I have a picture with you? A photo with you.
So you met him as a fangirl. And then...
I met him as a fangirl, never knowing I'm going to write a book about him, a children's story about him.
I believe that you started off life as a self-published author. The Boy Who Loved to Dance has been published by a traditional publisher. Is there a big difference between the two?
With self-publishing, you have all the control over what you've written. And you also have all the control about the finance issue. Money that you pay, money that you get in, profit that you make. And it doesn't mean that when I self-publish that I don't have my work edited. I do have it edited because that's always the accusation that self-publishers don't have their work edited. And I see too that my work gets edited. With mainstream, the book was edited, both the English and the Afrikaans version. But you know what is the thing with mainstream publishing? Every writer wants to be published by mainstream. So you don't rock the boat. You know, when that manuscript comes with all the changes and all that and stuff that's been added and left out, you say, okay, I leave it. So today I haven't decided yet. Will I keep the mainstream way or will I go on with self-publishing? But this is something that I will discuss with other writers. Because it needs to be discussed. There needs to be a whole discourse around mainstream publishing and self-publishing. Because I think, you know what they do these days? You have mainstream publishers who will publish a poet or a novel, you know, somebody who writes novels, but you must pay as the writer.
Hybrid.
They will get somebody to edit. They will get somebody to design the cover. They'll get the ISBN number, have the book printed. But you would have paid the 70,000 rand for 100 books.
Some people call that vanity publishing. Do you think that's an accurate word?
I don't know if it's an accurate word. I read about it, but I don't really understand what they mean with vanity.
Probably because in traditional publishing, it's sort of common knowledge that you never give money over. You're supposed to receive money. And in America, they give you multi-million dollar advances, which we don't really have in this country. I've known because I published, self-published a children's book that I was looked down upon. And then we created a little publishing house called Adlib. And so, you know, one has to be at one step removed from that subjectivity that it's you are doing everything. But in actual fact, you're branding yourself. You have to do your own publicity. You have to stay in the public eye. I believe you're very active on Facebook.
Yes. Talking about branding and self-publishing and mainstream publishing, do you know that mainstream publishers does not advertise books the way they used to be? They used to do. I remember from the past that they would have two or three book launches. Now they have one, and that's it, where they give the people wine and the writer signs the book, and that's it. And I know that mainstream writers, published writers, they drive in their cars with their boots full of their books.
Because we all are, in a sense, branding ourselves. You get a window when you launch, say maybe a 6-week window, even in the stores, from the publisher, from the publicist. And in actual fact, it's a full-time kind of dedication to keeping your book out, because diamonds are forever if you tell people that they're there, right?
Yeah, the thing is also with self-publishing, I say that a book gets old very quickly. So when you self-publish, you keep your book new all the time.
Great tip.
You go to a coffee shop. You speak to the owner. You have advertisements. People come and you tell people your story and they buy your book.
But isn't that pertinent to self-published or traditionally published? I was traditionally published for my adult book, but I spent 3 years growing a community, if you like, on places like Facebook, in festivals and conferences, wanting my publisher. In fact, we're on, I think, our fourth print run. I've just actually ordered another 100 books, and it was published 5 years ago. So I'm still, in a sense, I perceive myself as a, if you like, a businesswoman writer or a writer who needs to know the business end to be able to survive, never mind make money.
The thing is with writing and publishing, why do you write? And for whom do you write? And once you have that clear, then what you do, for me, it's very clear. I write about, you know, the people in my community. Well, it's universal and it's big things that I write sometimes. But I also know that people of my community are hungry to read about themselves. And I've seen that gap. You know, as a writer, I have started so many friendships because people love what I write. And I want to be friends with people, not to exploit them, because I know if I work hard enough, they will buy my second book or my third book.
And love you too. They fall in love with you through the book, don't they?
Yeah, they do. You see, it's not just only about writing, especially when you are involved in poetry and so on. It's about taking your craft and working it. And with poetry especially, you perform your work. Mm. You work harder than you sit at home. You stand in front of the mirror and you practice your poem. And I mean, I might be a kind of a drama queen. I perform and I want to seduce my reader. And I want to seduce my listener because it must be the full package.
I've got a lot of experience in radio and audio and actually am in the process of doing my audiobook, but every word one writes should be read aloud at least to oneself to hear if it resonates, to hear it in the ear, don't you
think? To hear the rhythm of what you've written and do you believe what you've written? You can only believe what you've written once you've heard yourself. You read it to yourself.
That should definitely be a meme. That's a beautiful way to end. Diana Ferris, author and reader of The Boy Who Loved to Dance, available in English and in Afrikaans as Die Seun Wat Net Wou Dans. Thank you so much for your time and your insights and your wisdom. So I believe that you are in bookstores everywhere, exclusive books and certain independent booksellers. The Boy Who Loved to Dance, Die Seun Wat Net Wou Dans, is available in all good bookstores in South Africa. Diana Ferris, thank you for coming. We wish you all the best, and I wish to know you for a very long time.
Thank you, Lynn, for this wonderful opportunity. It's indeed a pleasure.